Blog Talk Radio.
Talk show. My name is Jansen Brooks, and today is September the 18th, 2021, and I hope everybody's doing fine. We have an exciting show today, an exciting guest today, but before we get started, let me just give you a little bit about the Council of Elders concept. It's a concept, ancient concept, where elders in the community would share wisdom and help young people navigate through life and deal with some of their challenges. And so that is what we are trying to do. Folks, today I'm very excited about our guest today. His name is Gerald Brooks, personal injury attorney in the Birmingham, Alabama area. And total transparency, he's my nephew, and so very proud of Gerald and his accomplishment and what he's doing. And Gerald, I know you're a busy man, a husband, a father, and community service, and I'm glad that you had the opportunity to come on the show today. Thanks for coming on.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and share with your listeners today, so I'm definitely glad to be here.
Oh, yeah. So now you are in the Birmingham, Alabama area. What is the vibe in Birmingham these days?
Well, Birmingham is a it's like a small city. It has a very townish vibe to it. It's very family oriented. It has a lot of the amenities of a large city. But still has a small town feel, is how I like to describe it.
Well, that's good. That sounds like a nice place.
It can be.
So, you are a personal injury attorney, and what school did you attend?
I attended the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, for both undergraduate and law school.
Oh, okay. Well, I attended Alabama A&M, and we're going to challenge you guys in football. And if we score one touchdown, I'll be happy.
Well, I look forward to that. Alabama, I think, had a good game early this week on ESPNU. I caught a little bit of it.
Oh, yeah.
I think Bethune Cookman.
Yeah, if we get one touchdown, I'll be proud.
Hey, you might want to settle for a field
goal. Field goal. All right, Gerald, don't rub it in, man. you went to University of Alabama, and what was your undergraduate major?
Well, I got my undergraduate degree in business administration, but I spent the majority of my 4 years at the University of Alabama in the engineering department. first 2.5 years of my undergraduate engineering, and realized that that wasn't for me, and decided I wanted to go to law school, and ended up with a degree in business administration before attending the University of Alabama School of Law.
Okay, well, you know, that sounds like a perfect combination, because after all, a law firm is a business. So you had a background in business administration and also a law degree. That's a great combination, Gerald.
It turned out that way. I had no idea that I would ever be running my own practice, but it definitely worked out well. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Right. Well, let me remind everybody that you're listening to the Council of Elders program, and today we have guest Gerald Brooks, personal injury attorney from the Birmingham, Alabama area. And if anyone has a question or comment, press the number 1 on your phone, and we will allow you to have a question or comment. But, Gerald, when you were growing up, what led you to becoming an attorney? Was that something that you wanted to do as a kid, or is it something that kind of came later?
It came later. I get asked that question a lot, and I wish I had some great story on when I had that moment where some light up went off and I decided I wanted to be a lawyer, but that's really not how it happened. I have to give my mom credit. She used to always tell me growing up, you need to be a lawyer. You like to argue. She was right. I didn't realize it back then. And what she meant by you like to argue is I was a devil's advocate. I would always argue the counterpoint. Well, look at it from this perspective versus that perspective. But I had no idea growing up that I would be a lawyer. I didn't know any lawyers. So that was not something that seemed real to me, being a lawyer. But going to University of Alabama, as I told you, I started out in engineering. And a couple of my fraternity brothers who were older than I was ended up going to law school, and I would talk to them about it. And I started becoming more interested in law school. And if they can do it, so can I. It became real for the first time, and I decided it was something I wanted to do. Took the LSAT. Did well, and the rest is history, as they say.
Okay. And your fraternity brothers, you are a Alpha, I believe.
Alpha Phi Alpha. First
Alpha
of all.
Alpha Phi Alpha.
Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Give a shout out to Alpha Phi Alphas, and I also want to give a shout out to your partner, Chuck James. How did you and Chuck meet up?
Chuck and I were actually fraternity brothers at the University of Alabama. He was a couple years older than me, and we had no idea back then that we would, one, be lawyers, or two, be partners in a law firm. But I met Chuck when I was a freshman at the University of Alabama through Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
Oh, okay. Well, so you're a personal injury attorney. Now, Gerald, what was your first, as a lawyer, what was your first job?
My first job out of law school was at a mid-sized defense firm in Birmingham. I actually represented insurance companies, auto manufacturers who had been sued. And I did that for about 5 years. And I learned a lot doing it, but it was not really fulfilling to me, and decided that I wanted to be on the other side of the table and be helping the individual as opposed to helping the company. But again, that experience was invaluable, seeing how the other side views things, how they evaluate claims, what aspects of claims concerns them, I think helps me to be a better servant to my clients today.
Oh, okay. So you went into the enemy's camp and learned all the tricks of the trade and then used it against them.
That's one way to put it.
What is a personal injury attorney?
A personal injury attorney is just an attorney that focuses on handling civil cases on behalf of individuals that have been injured or lost a loved one due to the negligence of someone else. When people hear of attorney, a lot of times they think attorneys handle all types of cases, and some general practitioners do, but there are some attorneys that focus on a specific area of law, and that's the area that I focus on versus, say, a criminal lawyer who defends people who've been charged with crimes, or a domestic relations attorney that deals with divorces and child custody issues and things of that nature. So there are different focuses that attorneys have in the law.
Oh, okay, okay. So what types of cases do you handle?
Well, our law firm is the Serious Injury Law Group, and as the name indicates, we handle all types of cases where people have been seriously injured or lost a loved one due to someone else's negligence, and it really runs the gambit. It could be something as simple as an automobile collision to much more complex cases such as product liability where somebody's been injured by a defective product, medical malpractice where someone has been injured due to substandard medical care, just really any case where there has been an injury and unfortunately many times a death resulting from improper conduct of another party are the types of cases that our firm handles in general. But I spend probably 75% of my time handling medical malpractice cases.
Oh, okay. Medical malpractice cases where doctors and hospitals have made errors which I guess end up in someone dying or being seriously injured?
Yeah, medical malpractice definitely includes doctors and hospitals, but it really includes all medical providers. As you point out, that could be a doctor, it could be a nurse, it can be a pharmacist, it can be a paramedic, a nursing assistant, any type of medical provider that I'm going to use some legal terms here, fails to meet the applicable standard of care, and that results in injury. And in medical malpractice, there are a lot of technical terms, but it's really a simple concept. Someone is injured as a result of negligence by a medical provider. It's all that really means.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, I know that a lot of people probably should have filed a claim. I know a lady personally who her brother had symptoms of colon cancer, and she the brother was kept going to the hospital, and they kept giving him the runaround, and sure enough, he died because they didn't give him the proper test and give him the proper diagnosis, which could have saved his life. So I guess some of that would probably be. Would that be a case for that something like that you would handle?
Those are some of the types of cases that we handle. Every case has to be evaluated independently. So whether there was merit to that case or not, I certainly could not say. It definitely sounds that way. But there are definitely important things that a physician should do when caring for a patient, and that includes providing screening for things like colon cancer, especially if that person has risk factors that put them at greater risk than the general public. And once you go in with complaints consistent with having some type of growth or some type of problem like that could potentially be cancer, there are definitely tests that should be performed. Anytime you go into a physician and you have complaints, they should come up with what's called a differential diagnosis. And again, that's just a fancy term, but all it means is a list of possible conditions that could cause that problem. And it's important that they rule out first some of the most common and the most serious ailments that could cause those symptoms. And if a patient goes in with complaints of abdominal pain, rectal bleeding, things of that nature, it's important that the test be run to rule out cancer, a colonoscopy or PET scan or other types of tests in order to make sure that cancer is not present.
Right. You know, you mentioned some other occupations in the medical field. Before talking to you today, when I thought of medical malpractice, I just thought about doctors and hospitals. But you say that it's wider than that. It could be a pharmacist. And what are some of the other fields that you mentioned?
Well, a pharmacist, your podiatrist, nursing assistants, nursing homes, really anywhere that you go to get medical attention is going to be governed by certain medical standards. And if those medical providers fail to meet those standards, it falls under medical malpractice. So it's definitely not limited to doctors or hospitals, any medical provider.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that that's something to definitely keep in mind as your listeners might have issues moving forward, just that any medical provider, it doesn't have to be a doctor, it doesn't have to be a nurse. People oftentimes don't consider pharmacists medical providers, but under the Alabama Medical Liability Act, they are considered medical providers.
Right. Well, we have a caller, I believe, caller 7433. Let's see here. Caller 7433, did you have a question or comment? State your name and where you're calling from. Okay, we'll move along here. Caller 4600, did you have a question or comment? State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Pianchi. I was looking for you to remind me of the show, but I see that the show isn't about racism and white supremacy, so I didn't get no reminder. But I really enjoy the conversation that this man is putting on. You know, funny thing, I directed one of my last siblings into engineering and business, starting off young, and he just graduated with his engineering major. His second major is business. Graduated with the engineering major in December. But I really like the school you went to, Alabama.
Roll Tide.
That's a great school. And my grandson went to LSU. And Alabama and LSU played a game, a football game. And it was one of the most beautiful display of patriotism I ever seen when Donald Trump walked out on the field. You could hear the cheers from miles.
Did you have a question, sir?
I already did. I asked to talk to him about Alabama. And I talked to him about the great school he went to. And I talked to him about about his major.
I agree with you, sir, that SEC football game is definitely a both unique and enjoyable experience. I'm glad you had that opportunity to attend an LSU-Alabama game. I know it had to be a great experience.
Oh, it was. It was. It was excellent. And that school has great majors, I should say, educational programs. And I think that more people should get involved in the courses like you did yourself. And you know one thing that you may mention about your town you're from? You say it's a small family. That's the key word, family. And that's missing in today's society because you see so many children being misled going into college majors, and they go for the easy stuff rather than the hard subjects like yourself. So thank you very much, sir.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you calling in.
All right. Looks like we have someone in 7473. State your name and where you're calling from.
All right. Good morning, Jensen and Gerald. My name is Malcolm Hughes, and I am calling from the local township of Ellisville, Alabama, this morning, where I'm visiting. I, too, attended the University of Alabama, and I went there on an engineering scholarship and quickly changed my major to get over to the School of Finance. I have a colonoscopy scheduled for next week, so I'm glad to hear your conversation. But today my question really is about landlord-tenant. Could you tell me about some of the things I, as a landlord, need to be aware of, or some of the interesting cases that you run across as far as injuries to tenants or landlords or liability situations?
Sure.
And before I forget, roll tide, roll.
Roll tide. 230 a day versus Florida Gators. Roll tide. Definitely be happy to talk about landlord-tenant law. That's not really an area where I spend a lot of my time in practice. We do have attorneys in our office.
It's more so with the liabilities or personal injuries that tenants have incurred, and what are some of the things landlords need to be aware of to, I guess, reduce that liability?
Yes, sir. I was getting there.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. You're probably familiar with the area of law premises liability. That is one of the biggest areas where I see exposure for landlords, and that's just where there's a dangerous condition on the property that the landlord knew about or should have known about and fails to remedy it or to warn the tenant, or it doesn't have to be the tenant. It can be a visitor, anyone on the premises. That could be something simple as pipes that are leaking that cause moisture and someone slips and falls. I've seen cases where moisture has led to mold and the tenant suffers an injury as a result of mold exposure. So it's really important as a landlord that if there is a complaint about a dangerous condition on the premises that landlord acts promptly to fix that condition, because if they don't, they can go liable and injury follows. And one of the most important that I would tell any landlord is to make sure that you have sufficient coverage, insurance coverage, to protect yourself and your personal assets should there be an unfortunate injury on a property that you own. But those are some of the most common things that I've seen in that area.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that information.
Thanks for calling in.
All right. I see we have someone in the 303-0099. Would you state your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, I'm calling from Denver, Colorado, Sanji Johnson. And I did have a question because I've received a lot of information, especially recently with, like, class action suits for specific issues. One of my issues is I receive a lot for some strange reason having to do with, like, Zantac and the spray that's used for weeding and so forth. And I think it's probably because of my cancer diagnosis. But with the class action suits, I'm being asked a lot to put my name into them. Do you have any advice pertaining to class action suits that go against these companies, if you deal with them at all?
Well, there are definitely a lot of class actions related to cancer-causing drugs, including Zantac, Losartan, Valsartan, where there have been impurities in those medications, carcinogens that the World Health Organization has opined can contribute to or cause cancer. So there's definitely a lot of that going on. As a question of whether or not you should participate in the class action or not, it really depends on your unique circumstance. I definitely signed up many cases involving those type of injuries, and many of them do go into what they call class actions or multi-district litigation, where a bunch of cases are grouped together for purposes of trying them. But sometimes a plaintiff might be better off in a standalone suit. It's just depending on a bunch of variables, such as where the case can be filed, what type of jury you might get in that venue, what type of injury you have. So there's no hard and fast rule as it relates to whether you're better off in a class action or better off in a standalone claim by yourself. It depends on multiple factors that would have to be evaluated.
Okay, my question also, well, I guess my question overall also is the factor that when it comes to them disputing or distributing the funds accordingly, because, of course, I hear about this is a multi-billion dollar lawsuit, this and this and this, but they want you to sign off on something stating that, you know, you're willing to receive funds from that suit and you won't pursue another one. So that prevents you, if I'm correct, from later on saying, well, you know what, I received this amount, but I don't feel it, you know, meets what I need financially for what I'm going through. So that's the reason why you say sometimes it's important to go with the individual cases. But what I do understand also is that the class action suit, most of the time, you're not financially responsible to pay for the suit itself, correct?
Well, that is true. You raised a couple. You're correct that if you are a part of a class action suit and you're not satisfied with the recovery, you don't really have a recourse. You can't go out and file a separate claim at that point. So that is definitely an important consideration. But as far as the expenses, typically in any type of personal injury claim, most attorneys take those on what's called a contingency fee basis. That means that the client doesn't pay anything unless there's recovery on behalf of that client. And I think that's true for both class action suits as well as individual claims. So I think likely you would not have to front any costs or expenses or pay any attorney's fees or anything of that nature in either a class action or if you were to bring a standalone claim with you individually.
Okay, but then my question is this. In the end, you're stating that the document that I would sign, I'm just double-checking with this, in most claims, then where would the amount that the lawyer would be paid come from, especially if you're not, you know, given anything for your suit? Is that just kind of like falling on the end that you're trusting you could get that, or would you be able to come back later and say, okay, we didn't get any money, but I feel you still owe me this compensation?
Well, contingency fee basis, meaning, again, that there is no recovery or there is no fee charged unless there is a recovery. So attorneys typically don't take cases unless they think they can win them, because if they don't win them, then the money that they've invested, the time that they have invested, is just a loss. But it's important that before you sign any document that you read it. I'm telling you about my experience. I can't tell you that somebody doesn't do it differently. So it's really important that you read any contract that you before signing it, and make sure that you're comfortable with it. But typically, if you don't win, the client doesn't owe anything.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Just want to remind everybody that you're listening to the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show. Our guest today is personal injury attorney Gerald Brooks from the Birmingham, Alabama area. And If you have a question or a comment, please press the number 1 on your phone. Gerald, what was it like on your first case on your own?
Well, first time I ever tried a case, it wasn't on my own. it was with a senior partner, it's nerve-wracking. Shaking like a leaf as you get ready for opening statement. But as you try more and more cases, you get more and more comfortable. Honestly, I still get jitters before a trial, and I think that's healthy. But I definitely get a lot less than I did that first time in the courtroom. I think that's like any type of event where you're in front of people, public speaking, or anything like that, the big football game, or you as a host. I'm sure you still get jitters before you go on air. And again, I think that's healthy.
Right. So you actually try cases in the courtroom?
Absolutely. Most cases resolve without having to try them by way of settlement, or unfortunately some cases are thrown out. But part of what I do is definitely get in front of a jury and make the best argument possible on behalf of my client and seek compensation for them. That's part of what a personal injury attorney is. And I would advise your clients that if you're thinking about hiring a personal injury attorney, I would ask them if they have tried cases. You don't want an attorney that all they're looking for is a quick settlement. You want somebody that's willing to go the distance with you if needed.
Right. That's a good point. So if anybody is interested, they want to make sure that their attorney has some experience in the courtroom.
Yeah, that's important. You want to make sure they have experience in the courtroom. You want to make sure they have experience handling whatever type of case that you're dealing with. As I told you, there are a bunch of different areas of law. And just like you don't go to a foot doctor if your chest hurts, you don't necessarily want to go to a domestic relations attorney if you think you've been the victim of medical malpractice. So you definitely want to make sure they have experience handling those types of cases and that they have trial experience handling those types of cases.
Right. Well, that's good advice. And so what are some of the common types of errors that lead to injury?
Well, we've been talking about medical malpractice, and some of the most common errors that I see that lead to injury and death would be giving a patient the wrong medication, that could be the wrong drug or the wrong dose of that drug. And that happens far more frequently than you would think. Failure to diagnose, which I think we've discussed a little bit earlier, where a patient goes into a doctor or a nurse practitioner and they have complaints that are consistent with a certain type of injury or disease, and that provider fails to appreciate that and fails to run the proper test for a proper diagnosis. Some other types of common errors would be when a patient is bedbound, unable to reposition themselves, and pressure ulcers or what's commonly known as bed sores develop. And these types of sores can be very painful to the patient, but they can also lead to very serious infections, what they call sepsis, which is when the infection injures the bloodstream and can cause death. So those are the most common types of errors that I see in the medical field. But also you have inattentive driving, truck drivers who are operating out of their hours of service and are fatigued and are not attentive as they need to be driving, or an 18-wheeler driver that fails to make sure that his truck is properly maintained, and there's some type of equipment failure that leads to catastrophic injury. Those are some of the most common things that I see.
I see. Yeah, well, that's quite important for people to know. I think in a lot of cases, people have legitimate complaints and legitimate cases, but don't seek legal advice about it. So it's good that you are telling us about some of the things that we should be aware of. So
yeah,
you have
about
go ahead, Jerry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the thing about a personal injury attorney, you don't need one until you need one. And you never know when you will need one.
Right. Right. Now, you handle a lot of cases where people have lost their loved ones. Is it emotionally difficult handling cases where your client has been seriously injured or may have lost a loved one?
It can be very difficult. Unfortunately, when I meet with clients, often it is at some of the most difficult points of their life. They have been seriously injured and are unable to provide for themselves and their families as they've grown accustomed, are suffering physically, emotionally, or they've lost a loved one. And it's hard not to be affected by that. You're not human if you're not affected by that. So it can definitely be difficult. And also you see pictures of these injuries. If there is a bad crash, you see pictures of the effects of that, see pictures of bad sores. So it definitely can be difficult, and it is difficult. But the thing that balances that out is that it makes it easy to go to work. It makes it easy to get up in the morning, put that suit on, and go into the office because you know you're helping someone that needs it. You're helping that husband get back on his feet so that he can provide for his family. You're helping that family that's lost a loved one hold the wrongdoer accountable and hopefully preventing that type of injury from occurring to others. So it can definitely be difficult, but I'd like to say that it's difficult and easy at the same time. It's difficult to see the things that you see and to see people suffer, but that makes it easy to go to work so that you can help them.
Right. Now, you have offices, I understand, in Birmingham, but are there other cities where you reach out to have offices or?
Yeah, well, we currently have offices in Birmingham and Montgomery, Alabama, but we serve in cases throughout the Southeast and really get calls from around the nation. Typically, if we have a case outside of the Southeast, we will associate a attorney or firm in that state. But currently, we handle cases in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and Florida, and some cases in other places. Yesterday, got a call from Michigan. And in this case, we will likely associate a Detroit attorney, which is where that was from. But offices in Birmingham and Montgomery, but our practices throughout the Southeast in cases from all over.
Okay, so boy, it calls far away as Michigan. How did they get in touch with you, through your website or referrals?
Well, the internet is an amazing thing. Sometimes it's by way of the internet, just doing Google searches or whatever. Sometimes it's a family member or friend of someone you know, so word of mouth. But there are many ways that people get to us, and I find that the majority of our cases actually come from former clients who feel good about the way they were treated and the service they got. And when they come across someone else that needs an attorney, they will recommend us. Marketing you can do is a happy client.
Right, right. So now, what advice would you give to a youngster who wants to be a lawyer?
Well, I think that I would I think I would tell them three things. One is to focus on communication. One of the most important things that you do as an attorney is you have to communicate, that is communicating with clients, that's communicating to a jury, to a judge. So focus on both your oral and written communication. If you're in school and you're thinking about courses to take and you want to be a lawyer, I would definitely take writing courses. Part of being a lawyer is writing briefs or filing motions, and it's important that you be able to concisely and persuasively make your argument to the court in written form. It's also very important that you be able to orally communicate. So I would suggest taking speech classes or communications classes that require you to get on your feet and speak in front of others. As I told you, the first time I was in front of a jury, it's nerve-wracking. It's good to get accustomed to being on your feet and being in front of others speaking. I would also advise people interested in the law, secondly, to, as best you can, stay out of trouble. You can get a perfect score on the bar, pass the bar, that doesn't mean that you ever get a license to practice law. Before you are licensed as an attorney, one of the things they do is evaluate your character. Do you have a character that is consistent with an attorney? And if you have a criminal history a mile long, even if you got a perfect score on the bar, it's unlikely that any state would ever give you a license. That doesn't mean if you ever get in trouble that you can't be a lawyer, but it definitely helps you to get licensed if you don't have that baggage. So to youngsters out there, just know that actions you take today can have consequences years from now, that you may not know you want to go to law school now, or you may not know you want to be a lawyer now, but you may be doing things now that could prevent it. And I think the last thing I would say is that if you know someone who's a lawyer or know someone who knows someone who's a lawyer, reach out to them. Ask if you can volunteer, or ask if you if there are any entry-level job positions that will allow you an opportunity to just be in that environment and observe. There are many jobs in a law office that are not necessarily require a legal background. For instance, in our firm, we have someone who is just responsible for going and picking up mail and running errands as needed, called a runner. Obviously, there are support staff like secretaries and things of that nature, receptionists. So there are opportunities to get the legal field without having that legal background. Or you can just ask, if you know a lawyer and they're going to court, do you mind the next time you go to court if I tag along and just sit there and observe? That will do a couple things. It will help you to gain insight as to whether it's something that you're really interested in. But also, if it turns out that it's something that you are interested in, it builds that experience base. So that's what I would three things that I would suggest to someone that is considering law school.
Oh, okay. Well, Gerald, I noticed you have a tremendous vocabulary in your field. How did you acquire that? Did it just come natural to you, or did it take tons and tons of study and memorizing?
Well, one, I appreciate that, but it's just part of going to law school. It is learning. It's no different than a doctor going to med school or an accountant getting their CPA. You learn the ins and outs of that field. Many late nights, early mornings, a lot of coffee. It's just a process. And once you're exposed to something over and over again, it just becomes second nature. It just becomes a natural part of your vocabulary. It's not something that you have to think about. I guess you could liken it to a basketball player who shoots 100 free throws a day. At some point, it's just reflex.
Right. Well, you did have the benefit of working for 5 years for another firm, and I would imagine you acquired a lot just by observing and actually working on cases yourself.
Absolutely. As I suggested earlier, my experience working in the defense arena, being able to see how they view things, working with, at that time, more senior attorneys, definitely learned a lot. And as you practice, they call it the practice of law. There's a joke saying that you practice in law because you never get great at it. You're always practicing. But the more and more you're exposed to things, that knowledge base just continues to grow. If you had told me 20 years ago that I would be handling medical malpractice cases, that I would be deposing doctors using medical terms and be able to be conversational about some fairly complex medical issues, I would have thought you were crazy because that wasn't my background. To the best of my knowledge, I won't say this for sure, but I think I'm the first lawyer in my family. So it's definitely just the exposure and the having the opportunity to practice for about 20 years now. It's just second nature now.
We've got about 10 minutes. Would you like to give your contact information, how people can get in touch with your firm?
Sure. As always, you can go to our website, which is seriouslawyers.com. And as part of our website, we do have the ability for potential clients to chat with a representative. There's a chat function on the website. Also, they can call our office. That office number is 205-206-7070. Or go to our Facebook page, Twitter page, any of those are great ways to get in contact with us. Also, there is a toll-free number that we have, which is 1-855 in the word Sirius.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, if there's anyone in our final minutes that have a question or comment for personal attorney Gerald Brooks, press the number 1 on your phone, and we will recognize you and you have a question or comment. Looks like someone has a comment, question. Okay. Now, your partner, Chuck James, does he also specialize in medical malpractice or?
Chuck does handle some medical malpractice cases, but he focuses more on other areas such as trucking injury and things of that nature. But again, our firm handles all types of cases. If you don't mind me putting on the interviewer hat for a moment and ask you a question. Prior to today, what were some of the misconceptions regarding attorneys that either you may have had or may have heard of others having?
Well, Gerald, you know, there's every occupation has their, you know, jokers and whatnot. You know, some of the misconceptions of attorneys is they're greedy. Some of them can be shysters, you know. You know, and I think those are more or less misconceptions because, like you said, when you need an attorney, you need an attorney. I mean,
Your experience is the same as mine. Those are some of the things that I've heard about attorneys. I don't think there's any other professions that has more jokes about them than attorneys. But as you point out, just as in any profession, whether that's a doctor, as a truck driver, or a teacher, there are those that are not going to be very good, and there are those that are great. So there are definitely some attorneys that might not have the best reputation or that clients might not have the best experience with, and I would just hope that if a listener has had an experience like that, that they know that that's not what the legal profession is, that there are many, many, many attorneys out there that really care, that are reputable, and that will treat you fairly. I'm glad that we had an opportunity to address some of those misconceptions. I hope that no listeners have that experience. But again, to the extent that they have, I hope that they will have an opportunity to have an experience with an attorney that cares, reputable, and that will treat them fairly, which I'm proud to say that I am one and that every member of my firm is one. And I know many, many, many others.
Right, right. I see we have someone, caller 9090. Did you have a question or comment today? State your name and where you're calling from.
Good afternoon. My name is Robin Taylor, and I'd just like to say I really did enjoy it. It was very good. And I'm calling from Huntsville,
Robin.
Alabama.
Huntsville, Alabama. Okay, all right. Did you have a question or
No, but I really did enjoy. It was very thorough on hospitalization and some different things, and we'll always need a lawyer one day.
Well, Robin,
right. Well, go ahead, Gerald.
No, I was just saying, Ms. Taylor, I appreciate you calling, and I hope that weather in Huntsville is not too bad right now.
Right now it's not bad. We've had rain earlier, but right now it's not bad at all. Thank you.
Well, I hope you have an opportunity to get out and enjoy your Saturday. Thanks for calling.
Well, Jerry, we got a few more minutes, and certainly thank you for coming on the show today. Did you have any thing that you would like to say to the listeners?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I've enjoyed it. Conversing with you and conversing with your listeners. I guess one of the things that I would say, if you ever need an attorney, make sure that you do your due diligence before you hire someone. If you are asked to sign a contract, review it thoroughly, ask any questions you might have. Ask questions of that attorney about their experience, about their law school. Again, do they have experience handling the type of cases that you may be dealing with? Have they tried cases in the area of law that you're dealing with? And just like a doctor, if you're going to hire a lawyer, it needs to be someone that you feel good about. And if you don't feel good about them, then they probably don't need to be your attorney. Hiring an attorney is an important decision. As we joked about earlier, you don't know you need an attorney until you do, but when you do, you really do. So just do your due diligence.
Right.
And make sure that you're comfortable with whoever.
Just a quick minute. I see we got a final caller here. Caller 0570. Did you have a comment or question?
Yes. I would like to get your guest's reaction to a statement that was made by Eddie Rickenbacker many years ago, and that is the problem with our society today is you have too many attorneys with unscrupulous character and selfish motives for doing what it is that they do.
All right.
Yeah,
got about 90 seconds.
It goes back to what we were discussing earlier. In every profession, you have unscrupulous practitioners. It doesn't matter what that profession is. There is someone out there that's looking to take advantage. I don't think that that's any more prevalent in legal field than it is in any other field, but it does exist, which again, why I would reiterate what I was saying earlier. If you're ever in the need of an attorney, just make sure you do your due diligence and feel good about who you're hiring. Ask the right questions, and that goes for an attorney. If you're thinking about a doctor, ask questions. Make sure that you're comfortable. That's the most important thing, and that you're confident in who's providing services for you.
All right. So we got about 30 seconds left, and let me just thank everybody for calling in. Gerald, thank you for being on the show today. I know you're a busy man, husband, father, and got a lot to do. Just thank you for coming in today. That'll wrap it up, everybody. Check in with us next week, same time, same number. God bless everybody.